This is indeed the five-year anniversary of Speaking of Strange. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren, and we are with a person who I specifically chose to be the guest for this five-year anniversary program, David Icke, a man of controversy, a man who has a deep level of insight regarding all of the greatest mysteries in life and also how it's affecting current events. His website is davidicke.com. That last name is spelled I-C-K-E, davidicke.com. He's joining me from England. But soon he will be in the United States. In fact, he'll be in Los Angeles February 14th through the 16th. David, what's going on in L.A. In February?
Well, there's a conference at the Los Angeles Airport Hilton Hotel. It's called the Conscious Life Conference. If people go to davidicke.com, all the details are there. I'm going to be talking on the Saturday in mid-February about awakening from the program and becoming conscious for a couple of hours, and then on the Monday I'm going to be talking for 7 hours and connect massive numbers of dots across an enormous range of subjects, including what's happening today and why.
Okay, so let's get back to this enormous transition that the world is going through right now, especially in the United States. We have a new president, Barack Obama. The economy is in the dumps. What does all this mean, and how should we view it, and what is this leading toward?
Right. Well, I could just finish in 30 seconds what I was saying before the break. These reptilian entities, have created vehicles, these hybrid human bloodlines, which have a sympathetic resonance with them because of the if you like, the genetic vibrational compatibility. And therefore, two things happen. First of all, the global secret society network that's been set up and has been running for enormous amounts of time, its job is to manipulate, and this is very relevant to Obama actually, manipulate into power in politics, in business, in banking, in media, and all these things, the hybrid bloodline or the gophers and yes men of the hybrid bloodline. In doing so, what they're putting into these positions of power is a vehicle which can be, quote, and indeed by then already is, possessed by these reptilian entities that operate just outside of visible light. And sometimes they come into visible light. That's when people see them and say, oh, did you see that? And therefore, they take over the mental and emotional processes, not that there's much emotion, of these particular bloodlines. And so these human families appear to be in power, but what's calling the shots is that which is possessing them, which is controlling their mental and emotional processes. Because what we're looking at, both with the reptilian entities and with these hybrid bloodlines, are computer programs, you know. And so it's when they're interbreeding, we perceive it from our point of perception as procreation of a new life. What at the highest level they perceive it as is perpetuation of the same computer program. So new vehicles are being created to take the conspiracy on into the next generation. This has been going on for thousands of years because the entities that have been behind it, as people, I mean, people have said to me over the years, why would someone give their lives to manipulating the world towards a centralized tyranny hundreds of years ago when they were never going to be alive to see it? Because the common theme are these entities who don't have the same timeline as us. They don't have the same relationship to time, and therefore, you know, these entities have been manipulating this reality all the way through history. And the people that we see in history who have been the front men for it, they've just been vehicles for these entities. And that's the common theme, and that's why it's gone on and towards this end through generation after generation after generation. That's the cement that's held the story together and has perpetuated up to the present day. So what we're looking at is, in positions of power, are either those who are of the bloodline or those who are front men for it. And when you look at what has happened in the last couple of hundred years particularly, we have seen this constant, incessant, indeed before that, but it's really motored in the last couple of hundred years, and getting faster and faster as we've got to where we are now, this incessant centralization of power in every area of our lives. Now, if you want to centrally control, if you want a global centralized Orwellian tyranny, the absolute essential to creating that is to centralize power. The more diversity of decision making there is in the world, the less control you're going to have over it. It's like they used to do years ago, where they used to have acts on the stage where a guy would have loads of plates spinning on sticks. If you've got loads and loads of plates spinning on sticks, then eventually you're going to lose control over them and your plates are going to start crashing. What you want to control the situation is one big plate on one big stick, because you can stand there at a central point and keep it going forever. This is why diversity in all areas of our lives, right down even to architecture, has been destroyed, and uniformity is being imposed all over the world. Now, like I said earlier, I've traveled to 47 countries so far, and I see the great diversity being destroyed and the uniformity coming in, the uniform culture, the uniform way of doing things. And it's all part of this centralization of power. Now, I have to smile when I see people on the left of politics who dismiss the idea that there's a conspiracy, and then pick up their banners and start chanting no globalization. What do they think globalization is? What is it? It's the incessant centralization of power globally that has reached such a point now that it actually has a name. Globalization. What is that? It's the centralization of power in transnational corporations, in politics, in banking, the whole damn shebang. Now, what has been happening to bring all this about, as we incessantly hurl at the moment anyway, towards this centralized global tyranny of a world government, world central bank, world army, world currency, electronic, no individual currencies or cash, that's the idea, and a microchip population connected to the global satellite system, which I've been writing and talking about now for 15 years at least. When we look at how that's coming about, it's come about through two things, two mass mind manipulation techniques, and this is all leading us to Barack Obama. One is that I gave the name to it years ago, problem reaction solution. You want to change society in a way that you know that if you do it openly and say, I want to change society like this, then you're going to get a mass reaction from the public. You want more surveillance, more control, more centralization of power, etc., etc. Or people are going to say, hold on, what's going on? We can't have that. But if you can create a problem like global terrorism or any problem that would allow you to offer the solution you want to introduce, then a lot more people are going to say, well, we don't like it, but there's no alternative given the problem that we're facing. So you create a problem covertly, a terrorist attack, a war, a credit crunch. You then, through an unquestioning mainstream media, tell the public the version of that problem you want them to believe. This man's the villain, or this situation is the cause. And you want the people at stage two, the reaction, to react with outrage, with fear, and you want people to, in effect, say something must be done. What are they going to do about it? Because that allows you to go to stage three, the solution, in which those who've covertly created the problem and got the reaction then offer the solutions openly in changes in legislation and society they want to advance their agenda towards this centralized Orwellian global state. And alongside that, you have what I call the totalitarian tiptoe. And this technique is, you're at point A, you know you're going to point Z, but you know that if you go there in great leaps, the changes are going to be so great that people are going to lift their heads up from the soap or the game show and say, hold on, what's going on? So you do it in as big a leap as you can, but not so big that you create too much of a reaction, totalitarian tiptoe. Now, you put those two together. Those two techniques are what have taken us from a diverse global society quite a long time ago now, but not that long ago if you really look at it, into this increasingly centralized uniformity that we have today. And of course, there's another equation in this, Joshua. The more you centralize power, the more power you then have to centralize even quicker. And so the speed of centralization gets faster and faster because of that. And now they've reached such a point with centralization of power that the whole thing's kind of flying along. Now, if you look at George Bush and Barack Obama, you're looking at a presidential version of problem, reaction, solution. George Bush, and anyone with half a brain cell on active duty can see that he was not running America. He was a front man. I mean, he was not articulate. He was not the brightest man ever to walk the earth, and that's the understatement of a long, long time. and therefore, he wasn't running America. He was a front man for the forces that are running America. And those forces, through him and his administration, have created massive problems. Those problems are foreign wars, economic problems of mega proportions now, and they've been created on purpose. The reaction from the public is, this can't go on, do something. Somebody do something. And so what Obama has been brought forward to do from the background, he's been in the background being developed and prepared for a very long time, going back at least to the early 80s. And they're bringing him forward, and this is how they sold him, of course, as the solution to the problem. So he's playing the cards when he comes to power on, I think, January the 20th. We're going to see him offering the solutions to the problems of the Bush administration, and those solutions are going to be solutions that advance the agenda of centralization of power, of more and more control of our daily lives, the destruction of privacy, more and more organizations and groups that are policing other people, and you're going to see more foreign conflicts. I mean, the idea that Barack Obama is against war is a nonsense. He made one speech, and even some of that's in doubt, against the invasion of Iraq, but he's voted with the Bush administration since then on votes for action in Iraq. He's not against war. He's talking about putting more people into Afghanistan, including more European troops. He said he would have no problem bombing Pakistan. He said that he would take military action against Iran in certain circumstances. This man's not against war. So what he's done, and again, you know, I studied mind control, both individual and mass mind control techniques, for a very long time in great detail in the latter half part of the 90s and then in early in the 2000-2001. And what I was observing during the election campaign, both in terms of Hillary Clinton and then against John McCain, was a massive mass mind control operation against the American people. And they did it like this. They had him constantly repeat a mantra of, and it's funny, I'm watching BBC World News here with the sound down, and I'm talking about him. Barack Obama's just appeared on the screen. He's walking all over it and walking off a plane at the moment. But he repeated the mantra of, I stand for change, I stand for hope, and I stand for something to believe in. But at no point through 2 years, including the Democratic campaign, did he specify what those three things meant. Why? Because the idea with this mind manipulation technique was to make him an empty screen on which you projected your version of what that belief is, something to believe in, hope and change meant. And for him to specify what he stood for would be to take away the attraction of very large numbers of people who'd say, well, if that's what you think those things mean, I'm not voting for you. I don't agree with that. Don't specify. The idea was to keep him as a blank screen and for the people to project their version of those things upon him. So, in effect, Joshua, where he became all things to all men and women. And once he'd won the election, and he then starts, and I was talking about this all the way through the last year. This is not, you know, being wise after the event and all that stuff, because he was an open book to me because of all the research I've done.
All right, we got to go ahead and take another break here, but
okay.
It all makes perfect sense to me. In fact, when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about whether it really matters. You know, was there a candidate who would have been any better, or is the whole system already, well, rigged, for lack of a better word? Is it too late for us to get any real change because the whole system seems to be somehow corrupt and infiltrated? I'm talking with David Icke. His website is davidicke.com. The last name is spelled I-C-K-E. davidicke.com. He is a man who will make you think, who will open your mind, and we'll talk more when we come back about what we can expect in this country, how we can perhaps change it, and is there something leading up to 2012? I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the five-year anniversary edition of Speaking of Strange. We'll be right back. Gentlemen, to the five-year anniversary edition of this program, Speaking of Strange, and boy, what a conversation I'm having tonight with David Icke, a guy I have wanted to talk to for years, and you can see we can take this any direction because we're really exploring both the nature of reality and how we are responding to it, especially right now in this country and in this state of current affairs. His website, again, is davidicke.com. That's I-C-K-E.com. So, David, is there any politician who would have been better who was running for president, or can we pretty much bet that by the time you get to be a serious candidate for president, you are already a part of the top of this corrupt pyramid, and regardless of how that turns out, what can we expect now?
Well, the answer to that is no, because, you know, when you look at the amount of money that is necessary to win the candidature for your own party, if you're a Democrat or Republican, never mind actually run for president, we're talking cuckoo land amounts of money. And these elite bloodlines that control the banking system and the financial system and the transnational corporation network, they're the ones that have the kind of money that can fund these candidates. So who are they going to fund? They're going to fund candidates that are going to advance the agenda that they're working towards. So this is why I found the naivety staggering among people who should know better, who somehow thought, no, I know it works like that, but Obama's different. No way can he be different, otherwise he wouldn't have attracted record funding, and many of his skeletons would not have been suppressed to allow him to be elected. I mean, his background in Chicago is a background that fundamentally connects him to absolutely deeply corrupt people like Tony Resco, but not only him, many others. The slum landlord who made a fortune from public money, which people like Obama voted for him to have and supported for him to have, to run public housing. And then some of the buildings had to be pulled down because they were in such a shocking state, and sewage was coming up through the kitchen sinks of people. And you know, ironically, vast numbers of these people that suffered as a result of all this were the black poor that Barack Obama is supposed to be coming to power to help. Well, you know, he's not going to help black people because he's a puppet of the Illuminati families, who are white families overwhelmingly, going back to the ancient world. And what you have in America, this is an important point, is you have a black overclass, as I call them. These are the Obamas, these are the Jesse Jacksons, not to the black community in America. They answered to the Illuminati network that couldn't give a damn about black people. Quite the opposite. So if black people, and I understand why they do, think that Obama is going to be a champion for them after he comes to power at the end of this month, well, I'm afraid they're going to be in for a very, very big surprise. And it's same with Africa. My great friend Kwaito Mutwa, the Zulu shaman, has written a poem about Obama, which is on my website, and it sees Obama in the very way that I'm describing now, because I was in Africa just a few weeks ago, in South Africa, where I've been many, many times, and Africa is buzzing with the fact that, hey, we've got a black American president now, things are going to change for us. Well, they're going to find out that they're not, and one of the key reasons they're not, and one of the things that we really need to understand about Obama is that his main controller, who's been developing him and bringing him forward to do what he's doing now, at least since the early 80s, is a guy called Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. Now, a few years ago, Brzezinski admitted in a Paris magazine interview that when he was national security advisor to Carter at the end of the 1970s, he specifically set out to entice and manipulate the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan, to give them, in his words, their Vietnam. He wanted to destroy the other superpower, as he said. And he did this by funding and training people in Afghanistan to run a terrorist war against the Kabul government in Afghanistan at the time that was a puppet regime of the Soviet Union. The idea was to let the Soviet Union know this was happening and for them to invade Afghanistan to stop it happening and to protect their Kabul government and in doing so get pulled into a Vietnam-style mire which they couldn't get out of. That's exactly what happened, and it cost a million Afghan lives, and they occupied Afghanistan for about 10 years. Now, those terrorist fighters, whatever, however you want to perceive them from your point of observation, that Brzezinski manipulated and funded and trained, later became known, or eventually became known, as the Mujahideen, and then the Taliban. And during the Soviet occupation, the CIA, the National Security Agency, which is the CIA's boss in truth, orchestrated the arrival of Osama bin Laden out of Saudi Arabia to be a front man and a focal point, focal voice, personality for the Mujahideen resistance of the Soviet occupation. And of course, all those people that were trained and funded, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of them, by American and British money and military and what have you, eventually became the, quote, terrorists that the same force now says we need to have an Orwellian state to stop attacking us. Well, it's ironic, you know, that Barack Obama says that he is going to massively increase the number of troops in Afghanistan to beat the Taliban, when his mentor and controller, Zbigniew Brzezinski, was the man that started the whole ball rolling in the way I've just described to put the Taliban into power and the Mujahideen and all the rest of it. When you see the background to both Brzezinski, who has a hatred of the Soviet Union, and his idea is to create, in effect, a third world war involving China and Russia. And in Africa, many people will know this, there is now a massive and growing Chinese presence in many African countries, and the idea is to create a conflict with China, not necessarily directly with America and Europe in Africa, but through various factions in different countries, in the way the Mujahideen were actually a de facto terrorist group representing the United States when the Soviet Union went into Afghanistan. So you can see these sort of resistance groups and terrorist groups in various African countries are also de facto proxy wars between superpowers. So many of these so-called civil wars around the world are actually just playing out a war, a conflict, or a tussle for power between the superpowers. And so Africa is going to not enjoy the Obama presidency, even though now it's jumping for joy at the fact that, hey, someone's going to represent Africa. And when you look at the administration that Obama has introduced and announced since he became would-be president after the election, it's absolutely awash with insiders of this conspiracy. And you look at his economic team, they are the very people, never mind representing the very forces, they are the very people who were fundamentally involved in creating the economic collapse that they're now being appointed to sort out. I mean, so the economic situation, as I see it, is designed to go down and down and down. If I could describe it this way, when you see a building that has been brought down through a controlled demolition, the first thing you see is the charges going off, and then there's a split second where the building doesn't appear to move, and then it crashes to the ground very quickly. I would suggest that where we are economically in the world is in that split second at the moment where the building hasn't yet moved. The charges have gone off and we've seen them, but the building hasn't yet moved.
You know,
idea is for it to collapse, because going back, and again, I was talking about this long before it happened. If you go back to what I said earlier, the idea is to have a world central government dictating to every country, a world army, etc., and a world central bank.
You know, David, let me just interrupt by saying you make so many good points. You know, all of this is fact-based. I mean, you have done an enormous amount of research. You have put all of these pieces together, and it makes just incredible sense. And yet, if you go to YouTube and you watch some of the documentaries about you, there was one I saw the other day where there was a commentator who said something along the lines of, when you listen to David Icke, he talks for hours about things that make perfect sense. It's a wonderful pyramid that all fits together. It's all meat and potatoes kind of stuff. And then he says, by the way, there are reptilians. And so the idea is there are people who say, well, wait a second, this guy is obviously crazy. Now, you and I understand that there is a perception issue here, but how do you respond to people out there who are listening to you who say, this all makes sense, but is this guy crazy?
Well, frankly, I couldn't care less. My desire is to accumulate information about what's going on in the world, not to win a popularity contest, not for people to admire me and think how wonderful and intelligent I am because I'm telling them what they find easy to believe. Therefore, because of that, I must be speaking the truth because it's what they think. I'm simply gathering information, and what people make of it is none of my business. My business is to uncover it and to communicate it, and then people can make of it what they will. And if people want to ignore it and dismiss it, I have no problem with that. They must see it as they will. I'm not here to convince anybody. That's the last thing I want to do. I want people to see information they don't normally get and then make their own decision on it. But if I could just finish very briefly that point I was making about the credit crunch, structure that I'm talking about and talking about earlier is a world central bank. Now, how are you going to justify the introduction of a world central bank if the economic system is working? People are going to say, what are you talking about? We don't need this centralization of power. What are you talking about? We're not having it. Everything's fine. And as a result of this engineered collapse of the financial markets, they're now talking, as I predicted they would, about a new economic global architecture and about centralized organizations to oversee the new global economic system and all the rest of it. They haven't said the words yet, but you'll hear them say them. World Central Bank. bank is part of that. And a world central bank will dictate to economically to every country in the world. That's the idea.
Well, I think that it seems clear that is where we're headed, and goodness knows, then we will be completely enslaved in every way once that we are able to consolidate, but we have to take a break, and this is really just a very important time for us in this country. It's an important time for us to understand the agenda, and there are not a lot of people out there who are able to speak freely, and David Icke is one of those people. You just heard him say he doesn't really care if he is coming across in a way that you agree with or not. He is telling you his view of the world as he sees it, and I think we all should learn from this. His website is davidicke.com. That last name is spelled I-C-K-E, davidicke.com. When we come back, we will continue talking about where all this is leading, and is there something to this 2012 date that we keep hearing about? That's something that continues to persist. You're listening to the five-year anniversary edition of Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to an exclusive News Radio 570 WWNC podcast. You can listen live, check out the latest news, get host info, downloads, and more at WWNC.com.
All right, and welcome back to, well, our last segment of the interview tonight with David Icke. And we are covering as much as we can squeeze into the program tonight. It is the five-year anniversary edition of Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. So, David, how altogether do you view the status of America right now? And ultimately, do you see any relevance to this date, 2012, that people so often talk about?
Well, I was saying years ago that the agenda was to use America to destroy America. And that's what they've done since, and that's what they're doing now. And they've got to quite an advanced state of that. Why? If you want to create a world tyranny with a world government dictating, using a world army, if necessary, to dictate and impose its will upon everybody, then you cannot have any superpowers in the world. You cannot have any country that can say to the world government, we're not doing that and we're not having that. And if you've got a problem with that, then look at our economic might, look at our military might. We're not having it, okay? That's not a global tyranny when the world government can be refused like that. So if you're going to have a tyranny, you've got to destroy all superpowers. And if you look at what's happened over the period that we've been through, the United States has been used militarily and economically to advance the agenda and to go into Iraq, Afghanistan, and all the rest of it. But in doing so, it has brought America to its knees militarily and economically. That's what I meant years ago when I said the agenda is to use America to destroy America. And that's what's happening. And in terms of 2012, I have a different view of 2012. You know, I think we're very, very, very much in danger of becoming mesmerized by it. First of all, there are great questions over whether the 2012 actually does work out from in our Gregorian calendar to what people long before were talking about, and or other people have projected forward, and whether it's it really is 2012 or whether it's 2011 or it's this and that the other. And people are talking about the fact that there's this movement going on within our part of the universe, where we're going around the galactic center and we're going to line up with it and all the rest of it. But when you look at the way the universe works and its cyclical nature, everything from, you know, the Earth going around the sun to all the other different levels of it, it's classic computer program. It's a classic computer program. It's just following a program. And so even if, you know, 2012 is happening, it's still part of the program. And you know, we have to be very careful that we don't get so mesmerized by 2012. Oh, it's all going to change in 2012, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. 2012 is important to the Illuminati agenda. It comes up a lot in their stuff and their writings and their projections. But I don't think that from a human point of view, a general population point of view, that 2012 is going to provide some fantastic happening that's just going to change everything. I think it's changing already. There is a vibrational change going on, which more and more people are tuning into, and it's operating like a spiritual alarm clock. It's waking people up from the concrete nature of their reality, and they're starting to open their minds and break out of the amnesia, this mind program, the amnesia that they've been living in, and then they can start to see everything in a different light. You know, people say to me, I can see it now, why can't I see it before, it's so obvious? Because you were basically in an amnesic state. You know, I use the symbolism, and it's even more than symbolism in my books and my presentations, of people on the stage while a hypnotist takes over their minds and tells them what their reality is. You know, the person next to them is naked. You try to tell someone who's been programmed to believe that the person next to them's not naked, or there's not an elephant in the audience. They go, what are you talking about? It's there. Don't be so stupid. And everyone's laughing because they realize that it's a mind program. Well, that's the state of humanity. We've been put into this amnesic state where we believe complete nonsenses, and we can't see things that are quite obviously there once the spell is broken. And you know, for me, we've got to be very careful that 2012 and all the stuff relating to it is not part of the spell, not part of the program. I think it is, because, you know, when you keep projecting forward all the time, you know, 2012, things are going to change in 2012, that's just like Obama saying he stands for hope. Hope is a useless emotion, because it's always a future projection by its very nature. It's like sitting on a carousel horse hoping that you're going to catch up the one in front. You're not. But you can go on hoping that you will, and that will keep you on the horse chasing the impossible. What we need to do is stop projecting forward with hope and start saying, we are what want change now. We want an end to this nonsense now. Not as some future projection that I hope is going to happen. We want it now. That changes the dynamics. Because now we're not waiting around for some date that something may happen or something may not. We're saying we want change. We want real change now. We want change from control by the few to freedom for the many, or freedom for the all. And we're not going to get that while we keep projecting it forward. And so I think 2012 has been massively overblown, probably on purpose by those manipulating our sense of reality. And you know, I keep hearing this 2012. Well, what about now? What about now in 2009? What about now? What are we going to do now? But you know,
well, what do we do right now?
People are being mesmerized by 2012, and I don't think it's a good thing. And I don't think that what is claimed for 2012 is actually the truth.
So what do we do? How do we approach the challenges right now? What should people be thinking about, and how do we solve this?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm going to keep coming back to this, but we have to free our minds or free ourselves from mind. Because, you know, people say my mind and his mind. I don't see it like that. I see it as the mind. The mind is the program. And if we're connected to the program, then the mind, which we perceive as our minds, plural, will go on dictating our reality. And so many things like synchronicity, you know, you can have synchronicity because you are guided by consciousness, by your intuitive consciousness, into situations which turn out to be fantastic, quote, coincidences, synchronicity. But synchronicity operates for the vast majority of people, not through consciousness, but through the program. You know, someone's programmed to be in this place and someone else is programmed to be in that place, and they follow the program because they're in mind and not in consciousness, then they're going to be in the same place at the same time. And so there's different levels of what we call synchronicity and paranormal. It can be the program or it can be consciousness, and they're not the same thing. And so becoming conscious and breaking out of the mind program is very, very important. And that means, first of all, to start with a blank sheet of paper, to stop taking belief systems in reality, in self, in the way the world is, as read, and start to say, well, hold on a minute, let me look at this again dispassionately, and look again at all the assumptions that I've made about myself. I'm the person that I see reflecting in the mirror in the morning. No, you're not. That's the vehicle. Your consciousness is using to experience this reality. It's not you. It's not you any more than a spacesuit is the spaceman on the moon. And you imagine, you know, you got spacemen on the moon, and one of the spacemen thinks he's his spacesuit. I mean, you know, it's like Houston, we've got a problem. Bill thinks he's his spacesuit. But that's what we're doing. We're identifying with our genetic holographic vehicle, which we have to have to experience this reality, because we need an outer vehicle which is resonating within the frequency range of the reality we want to interact with. Otherwise, I couldn't hold this phone up. My consciousness couldn't hold this phone up. It's vibrating too quickly. So I take an outer vehicle which allows me to interact with the world I want to experience. So one of the great ways that we are manipulated into a sense of limitation, into a sense of little me, I've got no power, what can I do, is to fundamentally get us to associate who we are with the physical vehicle. This is why racism is so utterly, utterly insane and juvenile, because it's saying that, you know, if I have a spacesuit that's manufactured by a different manufacturer and is a different color to the one that you got your spacesuit from, then I'm superior to you. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But, you know, it's all part of the illusion that we put in to identify with the vehicle and therefore identify with limitation, and I can't. So that's fundamental, but there's many other things I could say about how we can break into consciousness. We'll be talking about in LA to an extent.
Well, we've only got a few minutes left here, so I guess one thing I wanted to ask you about, do you feel like that you have been monitored, or that there are people out there who have tried to prevent you from speaking to these enormous crowds you address?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I've had direct opposition. I've had massive attacks on me financially and all the rest of it. But, you know, hey, it's a fly on an elephant's back. I am consciousness. You know, I'm not David, I'm Goliath, if you want to look at big man, small, big power, small power, big man, small man symbolism. And we all are. We're consciousness. We can do whatever we like. We have no limitation. The limitation we have is the limitation that we are manipulated to believe in. And if we believe in little me, we'll live little me lives. If we understand that we are consciousness, all that is, has been and ever will be, and we're having an experience. David Icke is not me. David Icke is the name given to the experience I am having. I don't identify with David Icke. He's the vehicle. I am consciousness, and therefore I have no limitation, and I'm all-powerful, and I have the potential to be all-knowing. And everybody does, because we're all the same infinite consciousness in the end. And if we start to become conscious, that's when we know what contribution we can make to bring this edifice of programmed nonsense down and change it from a prison to a paradise, which is just a different state of being. That's all it is. And so starting to break out of this belief systems that are the program telling us we're American, we're British, we're black, we're white, and we're sky blue pink, we're Christian, we're Muslim, we're Jewish, you know, all these fault lines of limitation, of division and potential conflict. Take a step back. That's the program. We are consciousness, and therefore we can rise above it, and we can see what is necessary to be done once we come from that consciousness perspective and beyond the program. But that, I mean, let's put it in simple terms. Let's put it in simple figures. The number of people who are knowingly manipulating the world to this end I've been talking about is a handful, in full knowledge of it, compared with the more than 6 billion people that are being manipulated. I see a way out of this. And fundamental to that is to put down the fault lines of division, of religion, of race, of country, of income bracket, of sense of superiority, and start to realize that this is not a conspiracy to enslave American people or Jewish people or Islamic people or Hindu people. It is a conspiracy to enslave all people. And therefore, we need to come together and in a united way put down the irrelevant fault lines of division and conflict and start to realize that when we're in conflict, the strings attached to the person we're fighting and the strings attached to us are held by the same hands. And when we realize that, we might have a chance to stop fighting and start to focus on what affects us all, the destruction of the freedom of us all. And I would say this, if people think it's bad now, then imagine what it's going to be like for our children. You know, look them in the eyes and say, I've got a religious battle to fight. I've got this battle to fight, that battle to fight with these people. Hold on a second. Tell your children, you know, when they're in a Orwellian nightmare, that you thought that you had these irrelevant battles to fight and senses of superiority that meant you couldn't cooperate with other people to bring an end to this nonsense that they by then will be fundamentally experiencing. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to them. We owe it to basic decency to come together, unite, and bring an end to this nonsense, because there are billions of us and there's a handful of them.
Well, that's a great.
I see a way out of this.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point to end on, because unfortunately the clock has got us. But David Icke, you represent the best of free speech in the free world, and I hope the power of your words continues to both outrage and inspire people to think a little deeper. I definitely commend your heart, your effort, and I hope that you'll keep us at Speaking of Strange updated on your work. And, you know, if you want to give one more reminder to people about how they can learn more about you and your work, that would be great. But altogether, I just sincerely thank you for being my guest on this special night. All right, well, folks, I am back live, and we are almost out of time, so let me just tell you, go to davidicke.com. That last name is I-C-K-E.com. Gosh, next Saturday, there is so much more to cover. I consider this a two-part anniversary edition of Speaking of Strange. I'm going to tell you all about my experience at the inauguration, and it's a wild one. And we're also going to have a great guest, Super Magnet Man. So what can I say? It's been 5 years, and all I can do is thank everybody who has worked and continues to work to make this a place where we can expand your mind. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tune in next Saturday. In the meantime, visit us at speakingofstrange.com.